It's Jim Fizell time here on the Saturday Morning Show. Always good to visit with Jim, who knows everything about ornamental horticulture, trees, vegetables, lawns, and gardens. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Orion. Good to visit with you this morning after an interesting week of weather.
Indeed, it has been an interesting week, but then almost every week this spring has been interesting, hasn't it?
Well, it really has. You know, you can't tell whether we're going to have dry weather, hot weather, cold weather, and we've had some of all of it. You know, in the month of July, we had almost 8 inches of rain, and this month of August, we've had 2.5 already at our rain gauges, which is really something. But before we had this 2.5 inches of rain, things got pretty dry for about 9 days, and stuff was getting to the point where it started to wilt. But that's not what I want to talk about today. Actually, this summer has been interesting otherwise. You know, we get around the neighborhoods, and Jane and I do a lot of walking around our particular neighborhood. And one of the things we always notice is the trees and the condition of the trees. A lot of our trees are in trouble, as a matter of fact. We've noticed this, a lot of declining of trees over the last couple of years. In fact, the last 2 or 3 years, a lot of trees leafed out poorly. And this summer, there are just a lot of dead trees. And we can hear the chainsaws and the grinders taking the stumps out all over a lot of communities. And municipalities are expending a tremendous amount of their budget in tree removals and replacements. Some of the causes, very interesting, because for a number of years, right on this program, you and I have been warning people about things that they needed to do to protect their trees. The first thing, of course, is the emerald ash borer. We're just about done with that catastrophe. There are a few ash trees around, but people have protected those, and those are going to be okay. We still have Dutch elm disease.
Do we?
It's still here. It's worse when trees are under stress. And we have a lot of trees that are being mistreated. I've walked by a particular home in our neighborhood for the last dozen years or so and noticed the mulch volcano around the base of this nice tree. You know what a mulch volcano is, Orion?
Well, I think I do, but maybe a lot of people don't.
Well, it is a pile of mulch or soil that's heaped up around the tree like a volcano.
Right.
Planting too deeply will cause the same problem, but this causes collar rot. It also causes a proliferation of new roots that are growing from the trunk instead of from the root system. This tree that I've been watching, they finally uncovered the bottom of it because it died. It looks like a woven basket where it has roots underneath it that were in this volcano that actually have girdled the tree and killed the thing. So that's another problem. Some of the other things, mechanical problems where people have run into trees with lawnmowers, and eventually that will girdle the tree if you allow it to go ahead and keep doing that, as a matter of fact. String trimmers are even worse than the regular lawnmowers because they damage the bark. Then another one is a biggie, is watering too heavily, where people have irrigation systems. They water the lawn sometimes 3 times a week, shallowly often. This isn't good for the roots of the tree because when you do that, you develop a shallow root system for the tree. Then when the water's turned off for the winter, you have nothing really to support that tree. All the roots are shallow. If you have a wide open winter, which we've had for a couple of years now, these roots can be killed very quickly. And another thing that we see right now, because we've had some mild weather, is people are planting varieties that are not really suited for this area. Some things that are not truly hardy here, they're going to find out in a few years when we have a good old-fashioned Chicago winter, some of these trees are not going to make it. Or we have trees that are planted that are not adapted to our alkaline soils. But the current spate of trouble that we're having right now is probably more due to the weather than anything else. And weather can kill trees. Once you get one killed, it takes a long time to replace it. The current problem that we have was starting back in 2011 to 12, maybe into 2013. And we were warning you then, you folks out there, about the severe drought that was going and that you needed to protect the trees. Even if you didn't protect anything else, it was the trees that needed water. Then we had the driest spring at that time that we'd had since 1988. The winter of 2011-12 had no snow, and the summer of 2012 was very dry again. At that time, we noticed leaves that were coming out late in the spring, some trees that didn't really leaf out all the way. And we saw plants that were wilted all summer. So the heat during the two summers caused a lot of damage. The mild winters with no snow caused a lot of damage. Plants didn't achieve full dormancy, and when we did have some of those rapid temperature drops, the trees weren't ready for it, and it did a lot of damage. So there are some things that have happened to these trees. Some of the things we couldn't have done anything about, but a lot of things we could have done to prevent the damage, could have watered and so forth. I always like to say you can't change the wind, but you can always reset your sails. You know, Jane and I are sailors.
Yes.
Anyway, you can't change the weather, but you can do something about it. One of the things you need to do if we do get dry weather is to be sure that you water things, especially trees. We continually say that. Make sure the plants go into the winter well watered. But you conversely don't want to overwater things like the lawns underneath the trees. If the winter is open and you have shallowly rooted trees, you're going to need to go out and sprinkle those things or water them in the middle of winter if you can. You know, there was a big development down on the south side of Chicago. I can't remember what they call it, but they planted a tremendous number of beautiful linden trees that got up to be 6-8-inch caliper. These are 20-30-foot trees. And one winter, they all died. Well, we tried to figure out what happened. We noticed that the sprinkler system ran every day. And when we started digging around these trees, we found out that the roots were crawling along just underneath the grass.
Right.
When we had that open winter, all the roots were dead. So that's something you need to keep in mind as well. Make sure if we do get hot weather that your plants don't wilt. The trees should not wilt. If they wilt, they deteriorate. And the most important thing is plant trees. It is so important. I like to think that we need to plant native kinds because they'll tolerate the conditions here. Don't plant more than 10% of the same family. That means 10% oaks, 10% maples, and so forth. Might be hard to find enough different varieties, but they're out there. The end of this month is Labor Day, and that's the start of the planting season. We need to continue to plant trees. I always say if our ancestors didn't plant them, we'd still be out in a prairie here, so we need to plant them for our future generations. So get ready now. Pick a spot, pick a tree, and get ready to start planting.
Good advice, because as you said, if our grandparents and great-grandparents hadn't planted trees, we'd be treeless right now. So that's a very good suggestion. Gardens we'll talk about a little bit later this summer.
Yeah, there's some trouble showing up in the gardens, in a week or two when we can get back in town here, I'll get on with you and we'll talk about some of these problems, some of the things that have happened, some of the things we can do to remedy some of that situation. Anyway,
the word for this week is plant trees.
Plant trees, exactly. Be ready. You need to be planning right now where you're going to put them, so when the time comes, you'll be ready for them.
Okay, Jim. As always, we appreciate your expertise that you've been sharing with us for over 40 years. Keep on doing it, and you and Jane have a good walk around the neighborhood.
Thank you, Orion.
Jim Fizell, specialist in ornamental horticulture, with us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Here on this Saturday morning weekend that features a lot of county fairs around the Midwest, but some that are close into the Chicago area. We have the McHenry County Fair, and of course I live in McHenry County at Huntley, but just up the road, about 10 miles at Woodstock, the McHenry County Fair. Also on the south side, Kankakee County Fair, and the Kendall County Fair at Yorkville. Then the Joe Davies County Fair in Warren, Illinois. And those are just some of the county fairs that are within easy driving distance of Chicago this weekend, and they go through Sunday, tomorrow. And the Wisconsin State Fair is going into its first weekend, and it will continue until a week from tomorrow. And then next week, on the 10th of August, the Illinois State Fair gets underway at Springfield. They put together a pretty good state fair again for us this year at Springfield. We'll be down there on the 15th of August for the Agriculture Day at the fair. And I'll be there to emcee the sale of grand champions in the evening. But before that, before noontime, the brunch saluting the agricultural industry of Illinois. Couple of things in the news this morning. One of these probably won't mean very much to you, but it brought back memories for me. The headline, Tokyo firefighters battle blaze at the world's biggest fish market. Happened in Tokyo this week. But I remember maybe 3 decades ago, I was on a trade mission, I think with the U.S. Feed Grains Council. That's how it was known at that time. And we visited in Tokyo at this fish market, the biggest fish market in the world. It's 80 years old, and over the decades has drawn tens of thousands of visitors a year to its stalls that are laden with exotic species of fish and fresh sushi. Fire broke out just before 5 p.m. on the 3rd of August. 44 fire trucks were on the scene, but efforts to contain the flames were hampered by the area's narrow streets and tight-knit buildings. And the thing that I found fascinating when I was there, we had to be at the market at dawn because that's where the tuna auctions are carried out at dawn. And that part of the market, known as the inner market, it's the Tsukiji market, not affected by the fire. But a lot of other stalls featuring fish, some very exotic species that I don't think I'd want to see on my dinner plate. But they are looking at the possibility of moving the entire market, which now is located on the city's most prime real estate, to a man-made island. The outer market is scheduled, not scheduled to move. So anyway, brought back memories to me, and maybe if you've been a tourist in Tokyo, you have the opportunity to visit the world's biggest fish market. It's amazing the way they throw the tuna around that market and how large the tuna fish that they feature at the market can be. No injuries or things of that type, but a landmark in the fish market worldwide in Tokyo that had that experience this week. Also this week, this weekend, as a matter of fact, I like a great deal some of the things that our Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, is involving himself in. For example, this weekend, the Secretary of Agriculture is on a 5-state RV trip. The trip is titled the Back to Our Roots Tour to gather input on restoring rural prosperity and the 2018 Farm Bill. Now, along the way, the Secretary has been meeting with farmers, ranchers, foresters, producers, students, governors, members of Congress, USDA employees, and other stakeholders to ensure good facts based data-driven decisions as USDA becomes more involved with Congress as it deliberates and formulates the 2018 Farm Bill. So that 5-state RV tour with the Secretary of Agriculture will wind down and come to an end on Monday. And then the Secretary will talk about it. But good idea. And, of course, we're seeing the Chairman of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees also hold hearings across the country to get input for the Farm Bill, which is supposed to be drafted by the end of this congressional year. Don't know if they're going to make it because they get so involved in other items that they're not able to take care of some of the things that have to be taken care of this year. But hats off to Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue. Market-wise, well, Jim talked about the impact of weather on trees. Weather continues to be the major factor now as the corn and soybean crops develop. And looking ahead to the August crop report next Thursday, Max Armstrong will be talking to our market guest, Naomi Bloom of Stewart Peterson at West Bend, Wisconsin, when we get to that visit here on the Saturday morning show. Coming up to 26 minutes before 5 o'clock, stand by. We'll be talking markets with Max and his guest. But right now we say, welcome to Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, this morning saying, look out, it's a scam. Look out, it's a scam. If you're hooked up to a cell phone or to a computer, you know there are a lot of people in the world who think they can spend your money better than you can. And I'm no longer amazed because I've seen so many of them over the years on the computer, particularly the emails that come from Sierra Leone or Nigeria saying, send me your bank account number and I'll give you $1 million in order to get my $4 million into the United States. And just this past week, I've received two telephone calls from a nice-sounding lady who said, I'm from the IRS, and we are about to start a lawsuit against you, and so we need you to call us so we can discuss the tax situation with you. Well, that's an immediate hang-up because the IRS does not make phone calls. But now let me share with you a recent happening for me that brings a whole new world into the scams. And I'm sure it's used against senior citizens because let me share with you my recollection of the conversation. I'm at home. My home telephone rings. Still have a landline. And on the other end, I hear, hello, Grandpa, this is Matthew. Well, Matthew is my grandson. He's 21 years old. And I said, Matthew, I said, it doesn't quite sound like you. Well, he said, I've got a cold, and so my voice is a little bit hoarse. And I said, okay, because it did sound like him. And I said, what can I do for you? Well, he said, I've got a little trouble. Three friends and I were in a car coming back from an event last night. We got stopped for speeding. The officers found marijuana in the car, and they've taken us in. We're in a holding cell, and in order to get out and continue this court situation, I'm wondering if you could do me a big favor. Could you put $4,000 on one of your credit cards, and I'll get you the address and all that sort of thing? And I thought, this is very strange. So I said, have you called your folks? No, haven't called them because I'm just too embarrassed by this whole situation. And I didn't want to call them, so I'm hoping you can help me. $4,000 on one of your credit cards, and that'll take care of getting us out of the holding cell. So I said, Matthew, is there a police officer there? Yes. Can I talk to him? Yes. And so there's a pause, and I can hear the phone being handed off, and then another voice comes on saying, yes, Mr. Samuelson. And I said, who are you? He said he gave me his name, gave me a police officer title. And I said, where are you? Where is my grandson being held in this holding cell? I'm in Lansing. And I said, Lansing, Michigan, or Lansing, Illinois? Another pause, and he said, Lansing, Michigan. So I said to him, well, tell me, how can my grandson Matthew, who is currently in Dubuque, Iowa, as a camp counselor at a kid's camp, be in a holding cell in Lansing, Illinois? He's in Dubuque. Well, he's here, and we've got him. And so he said, if you put $4,000 on your credit card, we'll take that as bail and we'll release them. And so the more I thought about this, it's not sounding. I said, he's in Dubuque, Iowa. How can he be in Lansing, Illinois overnight? And I said, this, sir, is a scam. And I'm not. Oh, one more thing I did. I said, can I talk to my grandson again? And he said, well, he gets one phone call and he's had it. And I said, yes, but this is one phone call. can't talk to him. And I said, sir, that's the end of the conversation. But can you imagine how many grandparents around the country might be getting calls similar to that? And it was amazing how similar the voice was. But whoever did the call knew I had a grandson named Matthew and had my phone number, my home phone. So once again, look out. It could be a scam. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. And at 20 minutes before 6 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, we're getting ready to talk markets, and we'll do that when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Naomi Bloom joining us in the studio from Stuart Peterson this weekend. Well, here we are, the early part of August. Recent days, they've been out there surveying the fields. They've been calling up producers. I think they survey something like 22,000 producers for the August crop report. And then the numbers come out here in the week ahead, reflecting conditions as of August 1st.
Yes.
What do you think we'll see in terms of the yield projections that USDA will come out with? Do you have your own numbers in mind, Naomi?
Well, I'm thinking that the USDA is going to stay with a conservative number. That just seems to be their mojo. I would think that for corn, they can't deny the situation out there anymore, so they're going to do a reduction. But what we're hearing lately from other analysts in the industry, they're looking for yields of 162 or 163, and I don't think the USDA is going to be that generous in their yield cuts. I would be shocked. I will buy you a steak dinner if they do anything more than drop it 3 points for yield on that report, because I just don't see them being that generous to the market in terms of making yield that small. So I'm thinking they'll come out with yield at 168 for the report, but I don't think they're going to touch soybeans at all. It's just a little too early yet. And
so where would that put the bean yield?
48. I think they're going to keep it right at 48.
And some of the early numbers that we've seen circulating around seem to indicate that USDA will be pretty close to that at this point. I mean, they're not thinking much below 47 or so.
Right, because obviously it's a little too early yet. But when you look back at the good to excellent categories during this time of year where it's been similar, the yields end up either right at trend line or they're drastically lower, like 3 bushels to the acre lower. So I think they're going to stick with that conservative number, especially when we have a cooler August than what many were anticipating. And some of the rains that have been coming through recently, they're going to, I think, just keep it conservative with 48.
The tendency for that soybean number is to climb. I mean, I looked back over the past 21 years, 14 of those 21 years, the final number on beans was higher than the August crop report.
Yeah, that's true. And that is something that could absolutely happen. Statistically speaking, though, I'm thinking that just I'm going off of weekly crop progress reports, that they'll keep it at trend line just because the crop, you know, you got 14% of our crop grown in North and South Dakota, and it's dire there. And Minnesota looks good. Wisconsin looks good, but we don't count. So it's just, I don't think that you're going to see it on this report. Could it happen down the road? Sure, depending on how the rest of August fares for weather.
Then there's the acreage number. They won't mess with that until October, correct?
That's what I think. So but what I don't know is, you know, we keep talking about spring wheat with the abandoned acres. And I don't know. I've been looking for the answer if they would address that on this report, or does that come in October? Do you know? I'm not even sure.
I think in the past they just haven't adjusted it until October. But we'll see, I guess.
Yeah. So then the only thing we'll see on this report then is to make sure that demand can stay constant and they don't come up with bigger old crop ending stocks that would surprise the market like it did from that last USDA report, and we'll want to keep an eye on yield. But making sure demand stays strong is important, too.
What do you think that ending stocks number might do, just judging by what we've been exporting, judging by our domestic use, our ethanol usage? Ethanol production is up from a year ago, is it not?
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. And we are on target for what the USDA is looking for, because the USDA had said that we're going to be using more corn for ethanol for this year. And so we're on track for that. So I don't think we're going to see any adjustments there. What I'm curious is if maybe we're going to see more corn use for feed, because the animals that are coming to market are suddenly weighing a little bit more. And I'm just thinking feed is cheap, so maybe we're going to see that increase. But otherwise, I don't think this report's going to do much of anything. I think it'll be a dud.
You think it could be a dud?
I think it's going to be
a non-event. Then we'd move on to August weather.
Right, exactly. And then start talking about outside market news. A lot of people thinking about crude oil as far as is OPEC, are they going to start to go back to increasing production like they're going to be, like I think it's like March 2018 is when they're supposed to allow the increases. So outside markets with crude oil, we're going to be looking at the dollar, keeping an eye on the stock market. Those are going to be the things that drive us if we don't have anything to talk about on this report and if weather stays pretty calm and quiet.
Weather, though, will still be the big factor, overriding those outside markets, will it not? I mean, you talk about those other things, and they're not insignificant, but it seems like when you really get down to the nitty-gritty, it's weather and the most immediate demand.
Well, it is, absolutely, and that's what drives the market in the shorter term with the day trading. If you step back and look at the bigger picture, this market hasn't done a darn thing for a year. Corn's been in a 40, 45-cent trading
range.
Very
narrow range, hasn't it?
Yeah. You know, since October, and even soybeans have been in the same big sideways trading range since last summer. So we're still stuck in those ranges, and like you said, you know, waiting for weather, waiting to see what the perception of ending stocks becomes, what the final results will be, but we obviously won't get those until closer to January, and then we're going to start talking about South American weather. So I think, though, the good news is that the perception of ending stocks is that they're done getting bigger, and now we're putting the brakes on, and we're going to start to see them slowly get smaller so that at least sets the stage for firm prices. But without a major weather issue, we don't have a reason to rally substantially.
Lest we forget, there is still that Safrinha corn crop to be marketed, correct? I mean, that thing is hanging over the corn market, is it not, from South America?
Absolutely, you're right. And they've had decent crops in South America and with the corn. And so they are a competition even more so than previous years. Mexico, you know, they're doing what they can do to just be ready to offset anything that would happen with NAFTA. So they've already opened the door to Brazilian imports of corn. So that is something that's going to keep pressure on the market, along with all of the old crop that's now finally starting to get dumped onto the U.S. market as well. So in the short term, we've got a little bit of an uphill battle. But again, because the yields in the country probably really are going to end up down at 163 come January, that's going to just keep prices firm for the short term.
Quickly, let me circle back to acreage for just a moment.
Yeah.
Eastern Corn Belt acreage. Did USDA in the June report fully account for the corn acreage that did not get planted or maybe got planted and wound up not being a productive crop after all?
Good question. I don't know is the answer. I'm not even sure. So I would say if you've heard anything, it would probably be more than what I've been hearing, because those are things that we've been looking for too, and clients have been asking us, and I don't know is the answer.
Talking about long-term demand,
yeah.
Let's talk about China for a moment. Now, they have very bountiful supplies of old crop corn sitting around, do they not?
They do, but to my understanding, they have now used up half of that rotten corn that's been sitting there. So they are working through it, and their crop is smaller this year than it has been in previous years because they have had some weather issues as well. And you're seeing them doing some importing from various countries around the world. So they are bringing in some fresh corn to continue to blend with the old nasty corn that's been sitting there, and they're using it up. So that, in the longer term, continues to be a friendly story where China, in the bigger picture, give it 5 years, they're going to be importers of corn without a doubt, unless they can get their genetics caught up by then or their precision planting, but I don't think they can get it done in 5 years. So there's a friendly long-term demand story, too.
I've heard some people say that they're probably not going to be inclined to want to produce their entire corn crop there, that they would be increasingly, some people think, turning to the world for their corn in China.
Well, that's kind of what they did with soybeans. And so, you know, I would absolutely see that as a possibility where they would grow what they can grow. But if you can import it from various points around the world, with, and, you know, they buy from Ukraine, they'll buy from South America, they'll buy from us. So they'll get what they need when they need it. But they're also going to still be producing somewhat at home.
When a grower calls you and says, okay, what do we do here now? What do you share with them these days?
Yeah, well, with the biggest thing that we're getting calls on right now is guys just throwing in the towel with the old crop. So for those who have been doing that, we're saying your basis probably isn't going to improve much unless you're in the Dakotas, where basis is actually improving. But everywhere else, it's going to probably have basis stay wide until winter. So we've been saying, okay, if you're selling it look to re-own it, but we're actually starting to go out to July of 2018 with call options or bull call spreads, things with low risk right now, but could have pretty decent rates of returns down the road. So we're looking at that. In terms of pricing new crop, I think a lot of guys did ahead of that USDA report. I know I was able to get a call out to all of my clients 2 hours before the report, and I said, you know what? If we don't get anything really, really friendly, we're going to drop like a rock. So make sure you get some cash sales made for old and new crop. And so I really do think that guys got something done, but you're going to see a post-harvest rally because the further that those combines go north, the yield is really, I don't think, going to be there to the extent that people are thinking, especially when I'm talking to my clients in Iowa, obviously the Dakotas. It really seems like Minnesota, Wisconsin are the best places, or parts of eastern Iowa or northern Illinois. So sweet, my clients in Indiana, their joke was, well, at least the corn is now tall enough that they can't see, you know, the
right.
crappy spots in the field. So
They are out there, but they get up in an airplane and fly low, or they put the drone out over the field. Doggone it, those holes are pretty obvious out there.
Yeah, they are. So I think with one standpoint, just really be patient. You'll get your post-harvest rally. It's going to come in the form of futures, though. So you'll be able to do some hedge to arrives and then get your basis locked in this winter.
Don't take your eye off the ball, growers, I suppose
right.
you would say.
Exactly.
Naomi, thank you. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Naomi Bloom from Stuart Peterson.
Today is the final day of the National Farmers Market Week. For the 18th year, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has designated a week to salute farmers markets across the country. And Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue did just that. And in Washington, D.C., they've held several special events at the farmers market located right next to the USDA headquarters on the mall in Washington. So it's a good weekend to go to the farmers market and enjoy visiting with farmers and producers and to enjoy the products that come off their farms. They're probably on the way right now to a lot of farmers markets around the Midwest. And you know they're coming in with crops that have been harvested this morning to bring to the farmers' markets. Just another way that producers are hooking up with consumers. And it's been interesting to watch the various farming operations that have decided to take it directly to the consumers, whether it be farmers' markets or other means. And one of the families I have been watching over the years, Crave Farms in Waterloo, Wisconsin, a dairy farm. But it's a lot more than a dairy farm right now because they take that milk and turn it into cheese marketed all across the country. And I noted about a week ago, Crave Brothers Farmstead Classics Fresh Mozzarella received first place and second place awards at the 2017 American Cheese Society competition held in Denver during their annual conference July 26 to 29. Competition pretty tough. Largest number of entries in American Cheese Society history, 2,200 products from a total of 281 companies. And all told, this dairy farm in Waterloo, Crave Brothers, won more than 30 awards with their fresh mozzarella in regional, national, and international competitions. And congratulations to those folks. Well, as we said, later today we'll be flying down to Keokuk, Iowa. We'll then drive across the Mississippi into Illinois. And final destination, Hamilton, Illinois, where the Western Illinois Threshermen's Reunion is underway. And this is the 50th anniversary of that event. Looking forward to getting a good look at farm crops across the northern part of Illinois as we make that flight this afternoon. And looking forward to visiting with a lot of you at the Western Illinois Threshermen's Reunion. Incidentally, Max and I have been talking about two events later this month, the Half Century of Farm Progress Show, and that's the event that takes place every other year in Rantoul, Illinois, and it's coming up the last weekend of August. And then, of course, a day later, the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois. Max and I will be there with our band on Saturday at the Half Century of Progress Show, and we'll be on stage at, I think, 3 o'clock that Saturday afternoon, the 26th of August. And then Farm Progress Show will be appearing every day at noon in the ADM tent. So stop by at noontime. Backpage will be there. A lot of the people who will be attending Farm Progress Show will be our guests. So stop by and see us and say hello. It's an event that we look forward to. And then, of course, the Sandwich Fair, which gets underway the first Wednesday after Labor Day. Max Armstrong will be there on Wednesday of the Sandwich Fair, and I'll be there on Thursday, Sandwich Fair. So a lot of opportunity for us to do what we like to do. Say hello to you in person. Stop by. And thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.